Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's February the 1st, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Along the way, we'll hear more about the BYE, that's the biotech yield endorsement that offers producers a crop insurance discount. I told you I talked with Gary Schnicke, and I managed to write and produce that story this morning, so you can hear it during this afternoon's edition of the Closing Market Report. And oh, one more thing for this Friday, Jackie Vakes is in the building. She'll join us for a good deal of today's discussion. Closing Market Report is a production of Public Radio on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, WILL AM 580.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby March contract in the wheat pit up 13.5 cents today at $9.43. The July at 874.5, a penny higher. Wheat in Kansas City finished at 9.90 and a quarter, up 23 for the March. July at 9.59 and a half, up 14.5 cents. And the ever important for at least the day, Minneapolis Grain Exchange wheat finished this March spring wheat at $13.73. Let me get you a settlement price on that. Well, I've got a previous and an open, but I don't have a settlement price in front of me. But it was up the limit, I think, for the afternoon. We'll get those numbers for you in just a bit. We'll finish out with the rest of the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade. The March corn at $5.50, down 3/4 for the day. The May futures unchanged at 5.13 and a quarter. And July at 5.22 and a quarter, unchanged. December contract at 5.19. A settlement price there, up 3 and 1/4. March soybean futures at 12.87 and a quarter, up 12 and 3/4. The May at 13.06 and a quarter, up 13 and 3/4. And July corn futures or soybean futures at $13.20, up 12 and 3/4. November's 12.54, up 8.5 for the day. Bean meal futures March contract 3.43.20, up 170. May up 2.90 at 3.49.20. May bean oil at 54.77, up 41. The March contract there up 40 at 54.12. CME Group livestock numbers 50 on the February contract, a 67.5 cent gain at $90.22.5. April futures at $94 and a nickel, up 22.5. And the March feeder cattle 105.45, up 2 even. That's up 20 cents even, rather. April futures up 32.5 at 109.37.5. And the February lean hogs at 59.87.5, up 140 for the day. Outside markets this afternoon, March crude oil, $89.03 a barrel, now down $2.72. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 12,722 is just about 73 points lower for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us on this Friday afternoon to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade, the Mercantile Exchange, and at the Minneapolis Grain Exchange is Chuck Shelby of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Thanks for being with us and filling in for Mike today, Chuck. We appreciate that.
Here and another exciting week. Again, a lot of action.
And there was a lot of action. Tell me how you found the week's trade and what were the most important fundamental news items that may have come across your desk.
Well, we like to see the exports were very strong. Again, a big number in corn that was supportive. Also, pretty good wheat sales. And as you mentioned, the Minneapolis wheat gets the highlight of the week. Certainly, limit up. And talking to the guys in Chicago about that, who knows where the end of that freight train is going to end up, because we're kind of in that rationing process. And that's yet to be determined where we're going to end up on that market.
In the Minneapolis, the last trade, by the way, I didn't have it to begin with. You know, you've got enough. You have the same piece of software, and I just couldn't find the right screen. The March wheat in Minneapolis settled up the limit at $14.03. July at $11.25. They were up 30. There's a pretty tight squeeze on spring wheat there. Will that keep farmers who were thinking about putting corn into the ground from doing that and actually just going ahead and dropping spring wheat in?
I think so, and again, that number may even go higher, Todd. So wheat, a lot less inputs to plant in corn, and that the price is getting up to be, I think that would certainly entice some farmers to get into that. Also, you got a pretty good spread going on there to watch, though, the March to May. May wheat in Minneapolis, 1274, 1275, and you go into the July, 1125. So it's one of those months where we got to see that spread narrow on that May and see how that turns out once we get out of the March contract.
What are the things that are supporting this market and pushing, in particular, the wheat in Minneapolis higher?
Well, it's basically one of those environments where we're the people that need to bake products out of wheat are running out. There isn't any. We've just used it all up, simply put. And the function now is if you're a bakery and you're in need of wheat, you can't really turn down your customers and say we don't have any wheat to bake bread or whatever they're making. So it's a function of anybody who needs it is really going after it and fighting over it, those last bushels, and trying to draw out any bushels available to them so they can get them to make the product.
And this is one of those particular wheats where they really can't change anything else out for. They can't change the hard reds or the soft reds out for the springs, right?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't think there's much substitution as the soft wheat's simply trailing along. You know, soft red's more of your cake and pastry-type products. And, you know, if you're a bakery selling a product that's got a certain flavor, you probably might lose customers or disappoint them if you change your formula and change the taste of that product you're selling them.
Tell me how it all plays out into the corn and the bean market.
Well, I think it's probably helpful as far as probably giving up some corn acres, some bean acres down the road to the wheat. Probably not in our best corn and bean growing areas of the country, but certainly as tight as supplies are and as important as that acreage number is going to be, it's a factor. And maybe, you know, go back a couple years, it wouldn't have been, but certainly as we head towards that March planted acres report, it's getting people's attention to see the wheat doing what it's doing.
On the corn and the bean market, I seem to recall, and maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong, that you and Risk Management Commodities were of the mind that you should be scale-up sellers and, to maybe 100%. I don't recall how far you were thinking of selling next year's crop or the coming crop.
Well, our plan is, Todd, before farmers get to the field somewhere out there by the first half of March, we believe they should be 100% sold, but in a flexible manner, partly in cash sales with call options, but certainly at these price levels, there's some real cost-effective put options that we'll be recommending. And again, the whole goal is once we get out on the tractor and plant, you know, it's easy, you know, to look and listen to real radio and see what's going on, but it's hard to make decisions on changing your marketing plan. So that's a big part of our plan is to have it done before guys get in the tractor seat.
Speaking of plans, tell me a little bit about what you're hearing in terms of seed availability for triple stack. We'll hear a little bit about triple stack corn later on in the BYE or the biotech yield endorsement for crop insurance. How hard is that to get? And then how hard is it to pick up soybeans if you're wanting to put more soybeans in the ground?
Well, it looks like the corn seed supply is pretty good shape. Haven't heard of too many farmers not getting what they want. Certainly this new crop insurance is a factor. I think a lot of guys are learning about that and what the benefits will be if they do plant those products, that they get those discounts. But at this point, no real farmers telling us they're having a problem with corn seed. Soybean seed, on the other hand, is extremely tight, especially you go south like Kentucky, Tennessee, where they had some real drought issues, and they're pulling seed varieties they don't necessarily want from down their way. And germination on the soybean seed because of the weather is certainly going to be a lot lower than we're used to dealing with.
Hey, we should turn our attention to the livestock, and I forgot to look this up, but there was a report out this afternoon. Do you have the numbers by chance in front of you?
Todd,
okay,
you.
Well, we'll see if whether we can come up with those numbers for the livestock report just in a bit, and maybe we'll talk about that with Jackie Vakes later in the program. On the livestock, though, maybe you could go through what your considerations are for livestock producers and for producers of grain. It doesn't seem that the prices that we have gotten to have really put much of in the way of pressure on making them liquidate parts of their herds, whether it's in the cattle or the hogs or even the poultry.
Well, the hog market certainly has staged a nice recovery. I think that's something to focus on as a hog producer here. We had a lot of hog guys getting really nervous as low as the hog market's dropped. We've seen a good reversal in the futures market and a good recovery rally. Part of that this week may be due to the weather. Is certainly, you know, there's some concerns over the weather as far as getting the hogs to market. But hog producers, I think, are not out of the woods yet, I would say. We feel using this rally in the hog market is a good place to return and put hedges on because, again, if this grain market, corn and beans and meal in particular, continues to rally into spring, this is just giving them opportunity, we feel, to get some hedges on it that can get them maybe back to a profitable level.
Anything else we should add before I let you go for the day?
Nope. The grain market's, you know, sold off there, price and profit taken over there, but not a bad performance when you look at the gold and the crude being down. The corn sold off the most, but again, we feel it's profit taken right there.
Chuck, thanks much.
Thank you, Todd.
Chuck Shelby is with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon. Here's what the forecast from our own meteorologist Ed Kieser looks like for the two-state region. He says a winter storm warning is in effect for much of Cook, Will, Kankakee, Iroquois counties in northeastern Illinois, and for much of northern Indiana until 6 o'clock Central, 7 Eastern time this evening. Ed says this afternoon in most of Illinois, skies will be cloudy. In northeastern Illinois, cloudy, light snow, flurries tapering off. In northern and central Indiana, cloudy, some areas of light snow and flurries. In southern Indiana, cloudy, a few scattered flurries. High, says Ed, from 26 in northwestern Illinois this afternoon to 32 in southeastern Indiana. Tonight, mostly cloudy skies. Lows will range from 16 in some of the most northern areas in central parts of Illinois locations, and then to 23 in the southern part of Indiana. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy. Highs will range from 28 in the northern part of Illinois to 46 in the far south. At the bottom of the hour, Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, will join us to take a complete look at what's been happening in the world of weather across the Midwest.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Don't forget to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Up next, this year farmers in four of the primary corn-growing states will be eligible for discounted crop insurance rates. I'll have more on the biotech yield endorsement. By using a biotech yield endorsement, farmers in Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, and Minnesota will be able to receive discounts on crop insurance for non-irrigated corn grown for grain. University of Illinois Extension Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnitke says to be eligible for the discount, farmers must plant hybrids containing Monsanto-based technology with the following three traits: Roundup Ready Corn 2, YieldGuard Corn Borer, and YieldGuard Rootworm. Schnitke has penned an article on the BYE. It is available online at the FarmDoc website. That's farmdoc.uiuc.edu in the Farm Economics and Facts and Opinions section, otherwise known as FEFO.
We in our FEFO talk about, you know, the premium reductions that are possible using that program. And on a CRC policy, it's about $3 an acre at a 75% coverage level and $5 at a 85% level, give or take. You know, that will vary across the state, but that'll give you a ballpark for what the premium reductions are looking like.
Discounts are available on the actual production history, APH, crop revenue coverage, CRC, and revenue assurance, the RA products. Schnitke says the BYE discounts are offered because Monsanto provided 3 years of comprehensive field trial data to the risk management agency, indicating that Monsanto-based triple-stack hybrids have lower yield losses than conventional hybrids under drought and other stress conditions. Because yield losses are expected to be less, insurance payments are expected to be less. Lower expected payments then justify lower crop insurance premiums.
To get those premium reductions, the farmers are going to have to plant 75% of their acres to Monsanto-based triple-stacks. They are going to have to sign a certification that they did do that. They're going to have to keep invoices of seed purchases that indicated that they purchased enough quantity of biotech seeds or triple stacks to plant the required acres. They're also going to have to get their seed dealer to sign a statement that said, yes, they bought that. And the final thing that they'll have to do is be be prepared for a spot check.
Plant tissues will be taken from growing crops. As is always the case, farmers should notify crop insurance agents if they believe they will have an insurance claim. All claims of over $100,000 will have certifications and invoices checked. Schnittke says farmers should maintain all paperwork relative to the BYE. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
On Commodity Week this week, we'll talk with Glenn Ring of Glenn Ring Enterprises out of Cedar Falls, Iowa. He'll join us about 4:30 in the studio this afternoon. We'll get that program posted to our website by 6 o'clock this evening. You can listen to it there at willag.org. That's willag.org, or you can wait until tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. Central Time right here on this station, Commodity Week. It's your weekly look at what happened in the commodity markets. In studio with us this afternoon and been along with us most of the day in the office is Jackie Vakes of Stuart Peterson Group. Thanks for coming down for Commodity Week and sitting in this afternoon, Jackie, on Closing Market Report.
You're welcome. I appreciate the opportunity.
I want to talk a bit about some things that I know that you discuss with farmers pretty regularly. We've been talking a lot about the Minneapolis Grain Exchange and the wheat, spring wheat in particular, here on the program for the last week and a half or so. But they've got some unique products that farmers in the Midwest and the Corn Belt can use to help price out, maybe more easily price out cash corn than other places, or maybe, I guess, without as much risk.
Well, I guess I'd have to say that it can be used in a lot of different ways when you look at the cash index, because it does represent over 2,000 elevators from across the United States. It gives us a pretty good feel for what's going on. And the thing I think that is most important is it gives the farmer another tool to use to be able to make good decisions. And the way that it can be used is when you look at the cash index, it, of course, is a reflection of United States basis. And so when I'm a farmer, if I'm in a position where I can't hold grain, let's say, into the fall, I know that I don't have a place to store it, and yet I'm forced into having to make a sale at a time when basis isn't very good, I could make that sale by the cash index and be able to appreciate the value that I got with the normal improvement that we see in basis after the harvest time. From an end user standpoint, if you're somebody who's into cattle, you know, or hogs, you can use this as a way to try and protect yourself too. One of your greatest risks is the basis change that you have going on in the market, because a lot of times it way exceeds what the basis opportunity is for you to buy, and therefore you could buy this contract. The unique part about the whole thing is that you can actually come in and you can sell the contract. So, you know, if you're in a situation where you are going to need to, you're going to need to acquire grain, or you've acquired grain and you're very fearful that the price is going to get lower, you can actually sell this cash index contract and be able to lower your cash price. So it's another tool that I think is extremely important and isn't being used very much right now.
How is it settled out?
It's settled out on a daily numbers that they get off of these elevators, basically, as the overall cash basis is what it is. So it's not a deliverable contract.
It's not a deliverable contract. It's a cash
settlement. It's a cash settled contract, yes.
Well, I have a question about that, because there's some discussion at the Board of Trade about the settlement process as we come into convergence not working particularly well, depending on what's been happening in either the wheat market, which seems to have straightened itself out for a bit, the corn or the soybeans. Have you watched this one settle out on cash settlement? Does it work very well? And do you think that would be another option that should be carefully weighed for the Chicago Board of Trade?
Well, I think it should be. It does seem to work quite well, and it's because it comes from a very strong factual number. The issue that we're having at the Board of Trade is that we now have more electronic trading going on than we do pit trading, and yet the board settles everything to the pit. And that's why there's a variation going on there. And so in this particular contract, it's settled just to an absolute fact number is what it is. So I think that, yes, it's an alternative. I think the Board of Trade will figure out what they have to do to get things straightened out, too.
Wait, I hadn't heard that before. So the settlement price, everything is settled to pit trade. And what does that mean? How far off are they sometimes between pit and electronic trade?
Well, we had a situation where one particular day in the last couple of months, we had the pit actually settled down about a dime where the electronic was trading down 47. And it was real trade. It wasn't fake trade. So what happened was, you know, there were people who were picked up and filled at this 47 if they were trading electronic contracts, if they had, let's say, they had open orders in the electronics. And yet when it was settled out to the pit, which was over 30 cents difference. And so it was there were a lot of us that called down and said, you know, how are you going to rectify this? And they said, you know, the rules are we settle to the pit. And for now, that's the way it is. As long as the pit exists, we settle to the pit.
And of course, that's slightly different than the convergence process that we have when you're making deliverables.
Yes.
So we're talking about sort of the same thing, but different aspects of it.
Well, right, because, you know, when you're talking about deliverables and the way that they do that there, you know, that's spread out over a couple-day period. Mm-hmm. That's based on a lot of storage costs, all those types of things. But when you're talking about this has always been, you know, in the past, the pit was always the biggest trader that there was, you know, until we had the electronic side-by-side. And so it was just natural for them to settle to the pit. You can't, you know, because the electronic continues to trade beyond pit time, how do you determine a settlement? And so, you know, until we either go 100% electronic or they figure out a way to average it out, this is what we're stuck with.
Jackie, we appreciate you taking the time. Looking forward to having you on Commodity Week this afternoon.
Thank you.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson Group. Bruce Bostard is with the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. He joins us from his office. Hi, Bruce.
Hi there.
How's basis holding up in your area of East Central Illinois?
Not badly. We've seen some improvements on the nearby on both corn and beans over the last week. Nearby corn, or February corn, let's say, last Friday we were 27 under the March. We're 21 under tonight, so we've improved 6 cents there. New crops only gained a penny. Bean side has picked up 4 cents in the course of the week, and new crop there is just dead steady. Quieter this week. Not nearly as much cash movement as we've seen in the past.
Last week when we talked to you, you were at the Illinois Grain and Feed Association office in Springfield planning out the Peoria event that's still yet to come. But I suspect by the end of the day, you did talk a little bit about the settlement process and convergence at the Chicago Board of Trade. Did you come to any consensus on what the board ought to do?
No consensus. I think the consensus is that something needs to be done. This process has been going on. We had some meetings in December with the Board of Trade. I think part of it is getting them to think that it's as important of an issue as we in the grain business think it is.
Why don't they recognize that?
Record volumes, so if it's not broke, why fix it? They're making money.
It's all about the dollars, isn't it? All right. What are your bids for the day?
At 480 on February corn. New crop is 475. Beans, 1232 and 1190.
Thanks much.
Thank you.
That's Bruce Bostard. He's the general manager of the Ludlow Elevator Company's 7 locations in East Central Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Friday afternoon. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast with Steve Hilberg of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. Time now for your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Little by little, streets in Champaign and Urbana are getting clearer after the heaviest snowfall of the season. The Public Works Director in Champaign, Dennis Schmidt, says 18 plowing crews have made headway, removing snow from primary streets, which make up about 40% of Champaign's roadways. He says once that work is done this afternoon, crews will concentrate on getting the snow off secondary residential streets. He expects that work will be done by tomorrow afternoon. An Urbana Public Works official, meanwhile, says their work may be done on all streets sometime tonight. About 7.5 inches of snow fell on the area yesterday through this morning. An anti-war group called MoveOn.org has given its endorsement to presidential candidate Barack Obama. Organizers say the group has 1.7 million members in the 22 states that are scheduled to vote in the presidential race on Tuesday, and it will immediately start a campaign to get them behind the Illinois Democrat. A man from Kentucky faces a murder trial in the 1984 killing of an elderly West Terre Haute woman. A DNA analysis freed another man who served 23 years in prison for that crime. 44-year-old Kevin Mark Weeks has been formally charged in Loretta Keith's death, following his extradition from Kentucky. Prosecutors say recent DNA tests on a bloody nylon stocking found in Keith's home link Weeks to her killing. David Scott was freed from prison, meanwhile, when a judge approved a prosecutor's position for his release in light of the DNA results. Douglas County board members have passed a resolution standing behind Coles County's efforts to revive the Future Gen power plant project. But board chairman Chuck Knox says the county isn't considering trying to recoup an estimated $500,000 spent by several local governments to try to lure the large-scale clean coal technology plant to Tuscola. Mattoon won the project back in December, but this week Energy Department officials said it's dropping federal support. A longtime exhibit at the Early American Museum in Mahomet has made the trip to its original home in England. A search for the owner of a powdered wig in its decorative tin container led museum officials to Blackburn and its one-time town clerk, Lewis Beard. The museum's curator says the Early American Museum is readjusting its focus and was happy to work with a British museum to return the wig. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a Friday afternoon. This is WILL. We're joined now by Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center at the Illinois State Water Survey right here in Champaign. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about snow across our portion of Illinois. How much did we get?
Well, it was a pretty good snowstorm. Anywhere from 5 to 9 inches I've seen in throughout central and east central Illinois, and it was a pretty general snowfall. There were a lot of intense bands of snow with the storm last night, and that's we're seeing some large variations because of that, where some areas got up to 10 inches or 9 inches and other areas got 5 or 6. But in general, it was a pretty healthy snowfall, and in most areas, it's probably exceeded the total February snowfall, normal February snowfall. So it was pretty well distributed, and it had a lot of water in it. It was pretty much close to a 10-to-1 ratio, so we had about a half inch to three-quarters of an inch of water out of that, which is also pretty good for February.
Boy, I think that our subsoil moisture levels ought to be building up quite nicely about
now.
Yeah,
I don't think there's going to be much problem going into planting season at this rate, unless we turn off things completely between now and late March, but and that isn't going to happen. So I think we'll be in really great shape with all the precip we've had December, January, and now to start February.
We're going to get a nice warm-up to let this run back in, well, hopefully back into the soil profile,
well,
but I'll bet some of it goes
off
into the streams.
What people hate about winter in central Illinois isn't the snow as much as the melting of snow when it starts turning dirty and slushy, and that's what's going to happen later this weekend. We are going to get warmer. Another weak system is going to come through, start approaching here by Sunday. I think we'll probably start seeing some showers in southern Illinois, perhaps Sunday evening, and then we have showers off and on perhaps Monday, and then some good showers and maybe even a thunderstorm or two Tuesday as another strong cold front comes through. This won't have nearly the impressive impact this one last Tuesday had, but it will come through during the day Tuesday and bring some rain to most of Illinois, and then perhaps some snow behind it as the air turns a little bit colder. So we'll be picking up quite a bit more precip, I think, here in the next 2 to 4 days.
Well, that sounds a lot more like March than it does February. You guys are going to be busy.
Yeah, it is a very active weather pattern, and it doesn't look like it's going to stop anytime soon. It looks like the rest of next week will probably be dry once this goes through, but we're still seeing signs that other systems will be coming through the Midwest and Illinois over the next week to 10 days.
You know, one other place, and I don't know whether you've watched this climatologically or not, in Montana, they were a bit worried that the cold temperatures would last long enough and that there wasn't enough snow cover to protect the hard red winter wheat crop that is there. Have you been keeping an eye on how cold it was over the last week and a half in that area?
Well, it has been cold. As a matter of fact, I did happen to look back through Montana a little bit. My father lives out there, so I have some sort of interest. Low temperatures have been generally down up until earlier this week. They've been well below zero, and then they had another surge of cold air where they were seeing 10 and 15 below zero across northwestern Montana. And then just a couple of days ago, minimum temperatures were 20 to 25 below zero. So it has been very cold. It started to warm up a little bit there, but there has been some snow, but probably not enough snow cover to really protect things very well. So I'm sure there's going to be some problems in some parts of Montana.
Steve, thanks for taking the time.
Okay, Todd.
Steve Hilberg is the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center here at the Illinois State Water Survey, located on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Be sure to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 a.m. for Commodity Week, or pick it up off our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. We'll have it posted by about 6 o'clock this evening. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a good afternoon.